This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
UN General Assembly overwhelmingly passes a non-binding resolution demanding an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. Iran calls on the international community to take a decisive step to stop Israel's barbaric crimes, saying the regime pursues a scorched land policy in Gaza. And the Palestinian Foreign Minister condemns Israel for using starvation as a weapon of war against over a million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in for World News. And now the UN General Assembly has overwhelmingly voted in favor of a resolution that calls for an immediate, durable, and sustained humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza.
The result of the vote is as follows. 153 in favor, 10 against, 23 abstentions. Draft resolution A/ES10/L27 has been adopted.
The U.S. rejected the non-binding resolution, but some of its key allies, such as France, backed the call for ending the Israeli onslaught. The Palestinian presidency welcomed the resolution, urging countries with a yes vote to oblige Israel to implement it. The Palestinian UN envoy Riyad Mansour also hailed the passage of the resolution as historic. The resistance movement Hamas also called on the international community to pressure Israel to abide by the resolution. They said Israel should stop its aggression, genocide, and ethnic cleansing against Palestinians. Member states of the UN General Assembly have delivered speeches as it passed a resolution on Israel's brutal onslaught on Gaza. Iran's permanent ambassador to the UN urged the international community to decisively address the barbaric crimes of Israel. Amir Said Iravani said Israel has been pursuing a scorched earth policy in Gaza. He said the regime has deliberately destroyed infrastructure and residential buildings in a way that there is no place to live in the north of the Palestinian territory. He also lashed out at the U.S. for vetoing a recent UN Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza.
One member state, a permanent member of Security Council, misusing its unequal authority of veto power and in clear disregard to the united will of international community, has decided to stand with Israeli criminal regime and materially enable this regime in its ongoing massacre against civilians in Gaza. The United States blatantly opposing a ceasefire with means prescribing war violence and eventually more death for children and women in Gaza.
Iravani said that the United Nations Charter initially predicted the power of veto as a tool to maintain and ensure international peace and security. The Iranian UN envoy, however, said that abusing the veto power has become a trend for the U.S. to obstruct peace and security. He said this is a discriminatory practice that must be eliminated. Meanwhile, Israel's indiscriminate attacks on Gaza continue for a 68th day, taking a heavy toll on people and civilian infrastructure, especially hospitals throughout the territory. Israeli forces laid a heavy siege on Al-Auda and Kamal Adwan hospitals in northern Gaza, with a number of Palestinians killed and injured. Director of Kamal Adwan Hospital and a number of medical staff have also been arrested by regime forces. In the southern city of Khan Yunis, at least 9 Palestinians were killed in fresh airstrikes, and several lost their lives in attacks on Khan Yunis refugee camp. To the north, violent artillery shelling continues targeting residential areas in Jabalia al-Balad. Meanwhile, on the ground, heavy fighting is underway in El Zaytun and Al-Shujaya neighborhoods in Gaza City. An earlier Israeli airstrike in the southern city of Rafah killed at least 20 people, including several children. So far, over 18,000 people have fallen victim to the regime's onslaught, mostly women and children. Head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says Gaza is now like hell on earth as Israel continues bombing the enclave. The UNRWA chief made the comment in a post on X after visiting the Gaza Strip. Philippe Lazzarini said what Palestinian territory is facing amounts to endless, deepening tragedy. The UN human rights chief has also called the situation in Gaza well beyond breakdown.
It is clear, if you look at the humanitarian situation at the moment, it is so precarious that the Secretary General, well, all of us have been saying what we had to say, including our humanitarian colleagues, because it's I don't even know what word to find in terms of precariousness. I don't know whether you can give me a better word than precarious. It's extremely precarious. I mean, it's on the verge of well beyond breakdown. So, of course, there is a clarion call for everyone and for the international institutions that deal with it to take it very seriously and to act on it.
Moti Abu Musabe earlier joined us with first-hand account of unfolding crisis.
Israeli airstrikes are maintained till this moment, as you know, that couple of moments ago, the Israeli warplanes targeted several areas and the surrounding areas of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, where we are standing right now. Massive explosions have been heard. And less than an hour ago, the Israeli warplanes destroyed to the ground a residential building in Azawaida village near Deir el-Balah city in the middle area of Gaza Strip, according to eyewitnesses that the voices of the Palestinian prisoners who were inside the house were heard beneath the rubble, which means that there is a massacre unfolding as the self-defense system in Gaza Strip is completely paralyzed, unable to extract the dead bodies from under the rubble. So that we are in front of continuous Israeli massacres unfolding on every moment, let me say. That the Israeli occupation forces would iterate the same scenario it applied and carried out in Al-Shifa complex regarding the attack on the Al-Shifa complex and arresting the Palestinian people inside. This is exactly what is happening right now regarding Kamal Udwan Hospital, as the Israeli occupation forces managed to raid the hospital and to arrest and to kidnap all the people inside the hospital.
Now, residents of the besieged Gaza Strip have been enduring appalling conditions under Israel's brutal onslaught. Some of them counted their ordeal.
Life became so difficult. We don't have food. We don't have water. For 3 days in a row, I haven't been able to feed my children. The prices are so high. We're six, and my husband all the time looking for food, but he couldn't find anything. My children are crying all the time, and I have one of my kids sick. He has intestinal disease, as my children still wear light clothes. We're homeless.
I attempted to bring an oxygen tank my disabled child needs to stay alive. But unfortunately, the Israeli soldiers ordered me to drop it near the checkpoint as we were moving to the south. I tried to tell them that my child is sick and disabled, and I stripped him to prove that he's sick. However, they shot at me. He needs a special food, which basically consists of the fruits, yet every time he needs food, I bring him a solution.
Iran's foreign minister says despite brutal killing of civilians, the Israeli regime has made no significant progress in its genocidal war on Gaza. Top Iranian diplomat made the remarks during a meeting with his Lebanese counterpart on the sidelines of the World Refugee Assembly in Geneva. He said U.S. needs to put an end to its unconditional support for the regime and its war crimes. The minister hailed Lebanon for its anti-Zionist policies, saying Beirut has always been a key pillar of resistance. Amir Abdullahian also warned about regional expansion of the war, saying if Israel keeps up its attacks, the situation in the region will get out of hand. He noted U.S. is making wrong calculations in its Gaza genocide, referring to U.S. defeat against Hezbollah in Lebanon. He said U.S. will not achieve anything in Gaza except killing Palestinian civilians. The Palestinian foreign ministers condemned Israel for its deliberate use of starvation as a weapon of war against Palestinians in Gaza.
As we speak, at least 1 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, half of them children, are starving. Not because of a natural disaster or because of lack of generous assistance waiting at the border. No, they are starving because of Israel's deliberate use of starvation as a weapon of war against the people it occupied.
Maliki was speaking at a UN meeting in Geneva. He deplored the international community for inaction towards the situation in Gaza. The Palestinian diplomat warned of condition that deprives Palestinians from the most basic rights afforded to all human beings. He said it was an utter international failure in protecting the Palestinians. Israel's imposed total blockade of Gaza, cutting the flow of food, fuel, water, medicine, and electricity into the besieged territory. Hamas military wing has once again targeted Tel Aviv with missiles in retaliation for the regime's deadly onslaught on Gaza. Southern city of Sadarat and settlement of Nir Am also came under attack by the Al-Qassam brigades. Meanwhile, heavy fighting is underway in Khan Yunis and Gaza City. Al-Qassam fighters say they killed nearly a dozen Israeli soldiers in eastern Gaza. A mortar attack was also launched against Israeli forces hiding in a building in Gaza City, killing a number of them. A number of Israeli forces were also killed with mortar shells in eastern and northeastern or north areas of Khan Yunis. Several Israeli military vehicles have also been destroyed. Israeli military says 106 soldiers have been killed since it kicked off its ground operation into Gaza 6 weeks ago. Also, 20 of those Israeli forces were killed by their own colleagues. Spokesman for the Al-Quds Brigades, that's the military wing of the Islamic Jihad movement, says release of Israeli prisoners is only possible through indirect negotiations and after the establishment of a permanent ceasefire. Abu Hamza said if Israel does not accept resistance conditions, then its prisoners will be killed under the regime's continued bombardment. He said if all the forces on earth come together, they won't be able to free a single prisoner. Abu Hamza said prolonging the war in Gaza, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu seeks to remain in power and evade the tragic fate of his tenure. He also said no matter how long the war in Gaza lasts, resistance will not surrender. The Islamic Jihad official said resistance is determined to achieve victory in this war. Yemen's naval forces have successfully carried out a missile attack on a Norwegian ship carrying fuel to the Zionist Israeli regime. Our Yemen correspondent has your report.
Another ship bound for Israel was targeted by Yemen's naval forces in the Red Sea near Bab el-Mandeb. The Norwegian-owned vessel was reportedly carrying fuel to the Israeli regime. According to military officials, the attack came after the vessel ignored several warnings from Yemen.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a qualitative military operation against the Norwegian ship Stranda, which was loaded with oil and headed to the Israeli entity. The vessel was targeted with a suitable naval missile. Over the past 2 days, the Yemeni armed forces succeeded in preventing the passage of several ships who responded to the warnings of the Yemeni naval forces. We did not resort to targeting the Norwegian ship until its crew rejected all warnings.
The latest attack comes as the Israeli aggression continues to kill innocent Gazans. According to the latest figures, more than 18,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli bombings. Yemen's armed forces said they will continue to target Israeli ships until the genocide in Gaza ends.
The Yemeni armed forces confirmed that they continue to prevent ships of all nationalities heading to Israeli ports from navigating in the Arabian and Red Seas until they bring in the food and medicine that our steadfast brothers in the Gaza Strip need.
In response to Yemen's measures near Bab al-Mandeb, U.S. national security advisors have called for the formation of a new naval task force to safeguard the Israeli and commercial shipments in the Red Sea.
Yemen's armed and naval forces have sent a strong message to Israel as they continue to impose bans on all cargo shipments to Israel. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
An Iranian court held a first public hearing on a lawsuit over Mojahideen Haq terrorist organization's crimes in the Iranian capital. Trial reportedly addressed the conduct of the group's main ringleaders.
Portray yourself as the one fighting for the people and at the same time fight the same people, your own people. That are how many Iranians describe the Mojahideen Khalq organization, or the MKO. A court session was held in Tehran on Tuesday to address a lawsuit filed against the MKO over its terrorist activities in Iran over the past 40 years. The lawsuit is aimed at highlighting the organization's crimes against the Iranian people and also the Western countries' complicity in these atrocities. Among the participants in the court are families of victims of MKO acts of terror in the 1980s. They blame the Western support for the MKO and want the organization to be brought to justice on an international level.
These terrorists have had an obvious connection with the U.S. in recent years. They have acted in line with the U.S. policies. The U.S., which claims to uphold human rights, has supported these terrorists. We expect the international bodies and tribunals to hold the organization and its supporters to account. Today, in our country, we see that the legal process is going forward, and we hope to see this process on an international level.
The Western countries have talked about human rights for many years, but we see that the human rights they are talking about have time and again been violated by them. The MEK atrocities against Iranians were supported by them.
A woman says MKO terrorists murdered his husband right in front of her and their children in their own house.
My husband was at home that night. Two of the terrorists ran into our house. They beat me and my husband. After that, they started shooting at him right in front of me and my children.
The terrorist organization of MKO has not been convicted by any international judicial body. In the meantime, it has been supported by the Western countries, including the U.S., which makes them complicit in the organization's crimes. Farzan Ashurian, Tehran.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6. 6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. The number of British households in fuel poverty will continue to worsen, touching 6.5 million from January because of a planned energy price increase and a scaling back of government support. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to new research by National Debtline, millions of people will have to make stark financial choices this Christmas, including choosing between buying food or presents, and be unable to afford to keep their homes warm through the festive season. About 6.5 million people will struggle to heat their homes sufficiently this festive season, while 2.7 million will have to choose between buying food or presents, highlighting the drastic impact the cost of living crisis continues to have on British household budgets. More than 14 million consumers are planning to cut back on the number of presents they intend to buy this Christmas, while 6 million have decided that they can only afford to buy gifts for children this year. David Cheadle, the acting chief executive of the Money Advice Trust, the charity that runs National Debtline, says, "This Christmas, the cost of living crisis is set to be felt more than ever, with millions of people struggling to heat their homes and many experiencing money worries." The survey of 2,000 British adults also found that many consumers are likely to turn to credit cards and other repayment methods, including buy now and pay later. More than 24 million UK adults, or 40% of Britain's population, plan to use credit cards to pay for Christmas presents this year. Of these, 12 million plan to use credit cards, while 4.7 million will turn to buy now, pay later plans to stretch the repayment timeline for Christmas presents over several months. David Cheadle said, "We remain deeply concerned about the long-term impact that rising arrears will have on household finances going into 2024 and beyond." He added, "After missing the opportunity to help people in debt in the autumn statement, we are continuing to press the government to introduce a Help to Repay scheme for energy arrears and extend the Household Support Fund, which is providing crucial local support." National Debtline said the situation could prove to be a ticking time bomb, with many of those in debt keeping it secret as they struggle with their personal finances. Almost a quarter of those in debt say they feel embarrassed about their situation. One in six people in debt say they have not told anyone about their situation, while 10% fear telling even their family members or loved ones. David Cheadle added, "It shouldn't be this way. No one has to go through a debt problem on their own." The website This Is Money has also covered this same story. According to Europe's largest solid fuel firm, Homefire, British households that heat their homes with log burners are tackling the high cost of living by buying less fuel and making it stretch further. Most British homes use electricity or gas for their heating and other energy needs, with the average home paying an energy bill of £1,834 a year, rising to £1,928 from 1st of January 2024. But more than a million British households rely on burning firewood or smokeless fuel, a greener coal alternative to heat their homes. This is particularly the case with rural homes, those with poor insulation, boat dwellers and off-grid homes. Many do this with log stoves or open fires, and less commonly with solid fuel powered boilers. But according to Jason Sutton, chief executive of Homefire, which sells firewood, smokeless fuel, barbecue charcoal and other items, the average solid fuel consumer is ordering less than usual this year and trying to eke supplies out further. Speaking to This Is Money, Jason Sutton said, there has been an increase in log stove installations, but people are using the products more sparingly. The average volume per customer has reduced. People are using less fuel. Jason Sutton added that Homefire's average volume per order has fallen this year and noted a trend for customers to buy smaller amounts of fuel more frequently. According to retail analyst Kantar, this could be able to help with budgeting, as many consumers have already adopted a similar tactic with their food shopping. The latest government figures from 2015 show that 7.5% of the British population burns solid fuel to help keep warm, with 2.3% using it as their sole heating source. There are around 26.4 million homes in Britain, meaning roughly 1.3 million burn solid fuel for heating their home, with 607,200 properties using it exclusively. Jason Sutton added, fuel poverty is impacting on many more people as the cost of mortgages and so on has now gone through the roof. Clean fuel organisation HETUS said last winter burning seasoned logs is the cheapest way of heating a home after kerosene, costing 10.3 pence per kilowatt hour on average versus 12.8 pence per kilowatt hour for mains gas and 39.2 pence per kilowatt hour for electricity. The downside is that central heating can warm every room in a house, whereas a log stove or open fire heats just one or two rooms. However, many households say that is enough or all they can afford. Many homes rely on so-called zonal heating, where occupants stay warm in a winter by heating some rooms more than others with log stoves, typically their living rooms, then turn central heating off or down in others. Bloomberg News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The number of British households in fuel poverty will continue to worsen, touching 6.5 million from January because of a planned energy price increase and the scaling back of government support. National Energy Action said in a statement published recently, many Britons struggling with high energy bills on top of a cost of living crisis are already using shocking coping tactics, with 2 million people self-disconnecting and going without any power and natural gas use. While wholesale prices have eased significantly from the peak of Europe's energy crisis last year, British consumers are still grappling with elevated bills because most government support ended earlier in 2023. The new polling commissioned by the charity from YouGov comes after Chancellor Jeremy Hunt's autumn statement, recently announced no extra aid for the most vulnerable households, and as a cold snap across Europe is pushing up demand for heating. Meanwhile, the regulator Ofgem raised the national price cap for energy to £1,928 from January, up 5% from current levels. That's an annual bill for a typical British household, but those using the latest amount of energy are facing a bigger rate increase. According to the National Energy Action, right now 6.3 million British households are in fuel poverty. It said that's up from 4.5 million recorded in October of 2021, when Europe's energy crunch began. The study showed over the last 3 months, millions have been using appliances like ovens or going to bed early to stay warm. According to data from the Statistics Office, based on the charity's estimates, more than 20% of Britain's households would be energy poor from January. Several suppliers, including the country's biggest energy provider, Centrica PLC, have already urged the government to consider measures to support vulnerable consumers this winter. Centrica's chief executive officer, Chris O'Shea, said in a separate statement, millions of British customers are struggling with high energy bills.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You are listening to Viewpoints on IRIB English Radio. I'm Atal, the host of this program. This series of Viewpoints is concerned with the thoughts and speeches of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two experts from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Qasim and Sheikh Sadiq. Sheikh Sadiq, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum, very happy to be with you.
You're welcome, brother. And Shaykh Qasim, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, regarding the speeches and the addresses of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Imam Khamenei, regarding human being, we get into the concept of adala. You know, justice or adala is a concept that the religion of Islam in general and the Muslim rulers in specific are mainly concerned with. First of all, I want to ask you, Sheikh Qasim, how do you define justice or adala in terms of Islamic, sciences and Islamic knowledge, and what's the difference between this type of adala with the non-Islamic one?
Okay. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Adala or justice normally is defined as to put the thing in its own place. So first we have to know about the place of a thing, and then, or some idea or some entity, and then to execute this action of putting that thing into its desired place. This is what is called adala in Islamic point of view.
So putting everything in its proper place.
Yes.
Okay.
So when you come, for example, if you go to the personal life of a person, this is exactly what should happen. If you want to execute adala or justice, this is what you should do. Mm-hmm. Or when you go to the social aspect or social dimensions of human life, this is exactly the same thing that has to happen. So, first, there are two actually steps that must be taken in order for executing or carrying out the action of adala or justice. The first, you have to know that thing and the properties of that thing and the place that it must be put, and then try to put it and place it in that proper place of that thing.
This type of look at the adala might overshadow all the aspects of the life of the Muslim,
yeah,
is
sure,
it so?
Sure.
Is it from, for example, the daily routines to the obligatory acts, worshipping, everything?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Goes under the shadow of this type of adala. So at the same time, we have this concept of adala in the non-Islamic terminology too, but I think it is very much followed in terms of the legality, the legal points, okay? Mm-hmm. From the legal, or it's better to say, the law system of the Western world. How do you differentiate between this type of justice or adala and the non-Islamic one?
I think the differentiation between these two types of adala, actually, what I understand, it's not just, you know, two applications of adala.
Okay.
When it comes to, you know, comparing the adala that is carried out in the Islamic belief system compared to what is to carry it out in the Western understanding of, you know, society and social aspects. It's not just, you know, the difference in the examples.
That's right.
Rather, it's, you know, the intrinsically and I believe holistically, these two idea differs from one another. So, when you go to the West or to the Western understanding of justice, what is in the center is the equality of, you know, equality of those two parties that you are talking about, the edala between those two or those many that you are talking about.
Yes.
So this is I think this is the most important difference between the Islamic point of view with respect to edala and the Western point of
especially
view.
When you're talking about equality nowadays, we see the rights of the minorities, the colored people, the genders, you know, the equality that's happening between them. But thank you very much, Sheikh Qasim. Let me get to Sheikh Sadiq. But I think according to what the religion of Islam says and what also the leader of Iran is pointing out, adala is a kind of, is a kind of need inside the human being. It is rooted in the very innate nature of the human being. That is, I think, make it very much basic need for a human being in general. Regardless of the color, race, language, or any type of differentiation. So, do you think that the type of adala that people are seeking for nowadays in the 21st century, especially, is this type of fitri intrinsic nature, adala, or no? That is something bound into the Islamic law system, or it's better to say non-Islamic law system, brother.
Good. So, we could put it this way: is the adala that we're seeking right now, is it the fitri adala, or is it just a social construct?
Yes, it's social construct, because this is the main difference, I think, between how Islam defines it and how non-Islamic systems of thought defines it.
Yeah, exactly. So to understand this, we first need to understand what fitra means.
Okay.
When Quran talks about fitra, it's not just any type of khilqa. It's the deepest level of our creation, which is tawheed. So, fitrat Allah allati fatara an-nas alayha, it's tawheed. So, we need to understand the relationship between idala and tawheed. How does idala go back to tawheed? Because everything has an apparent meaning, everything that we know has a manifestation, a shadow in this world, and it has a reality. The deepest reality of idala is a balance between all the names of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, all the qualities of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is Rahim. That's one quality, but he's not just Rahim. He's also Shadid.
Okay.
He's Muntaqim.
Mm-hmm.
When you have all of these names in balance, you have idala.
Okay.
So, and as Sheikh Qasim mentioned, everything in its place. So Rahim, Ruhamau Bainahum.
That's right.
When you have Shadid, Ashiddaw al Kuffar. So you have to be Shadid in its place, you have to be Rahim in its own place. You cannot be Rahim everywhere.
Okay.
If you're Rahim with Kuffar, kind to everyone, that's not an Islamic quality.
So, sorry, you mean this type of adala or justice that is in the very nature of the Tawhidi thinking or monotheistic thinking is automatically conveyed into the nature of the human beings.
Exactly.
As the creator of the human beings. Very beautiful. Okay. And that's, if you can't say that human beings at least sensed some of the parts or fragrance of the divinity.
Exactly.
So this type of adala has to be conveyed into the very soul of the human being.
But the problem is sometimes we go out of balance, right? Some people are so focused on being Rahim.
Okay.
That they forget that they have to be Shadid sometimes.
That's all right.
That creates problems.
So when we take a look at just the lifestyle and the conduct of Prophet Muhammad and the infallible Imams, you know, during the history, we could find such a thing.
Exactly.
I mean, this type of harmony, divine harmony of Adala in their behaviors. But at the same time, you know, sometimes I think to myself that The nature around, which are the other parts of the creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, are doing their adala towards us as human beings, okay? The sun rises and the sun sets and the moon and the nature, the trees and the animals, okay? The clouds, the rain, all of them are in a type of harmonious nature, which is, I think, a type of adala can be seen in them working towards us. But as you said, that's right. This is a kind of feeling inside. So, if you wanna apply such a kind of justice, Sheikh Sadiq, in our life, how can we do that? I mean, what is the method? For example, as a Muslim, wanna apply this type of adala in my life, what should I do?
Well, if we wanna make, half-hearted, just attempts, we can do what we're doing right now. Everyone is basically seeking adala in some way. But if we want to do it the right way, we need to look at a complete manifestation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Okay.
We need to look at Amirul Mu'mineen.
Mm-hmm.
We need to look at our imams.
That's right.
Right? When we have our Sahib al-Zaman, when he is our leader, then we will look at him and see full manifestation of Allah, all the names of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in its place.
That's right.
And we know what adala is
mm-hmm.
at every moment.
Okay.
Then we can have true justice.
That's all right. But finding true justice is difficult. As I said, there are different movements nowadays whose main slogan and motto is seeking justice. Justice for this, justice for that. Justice for animals, justice for nature, justice for this and that, you know. And it makes it very much difficult. But Sheikh Qasim, let's get to you. Thank you much, Sheikh Sadiq, for elaboration on this topic. And Sheikh Qasim, let me get to you, brother. Is it justice to give everything, everybody... and every person around the same portion of what we have? Is this adala?
Of course not. You know, as I mentioned earlier, the thing is, or the difference that we can observe in the Islamic system belief comparing to what we are seeing in, for example, the liberal understanding of adala, is the way I said that there are two compartments when you're talking about adala and justice. There are two things that you have to think about. The first is how you describe that thing, you know, and how to distinguish the place, the proper place of that thing, and then try to execute and try to carry out, you know, putting that thing in its own place.
Okay.
So the clash or the difference. Put it this way. The difference that happens is start from this, you know, the first step, the first thing that we have to do, which is how to define that object that you're talking about, its justice or putting it into justice. So when you go to Islam and you find out how Islam defines, for example, when you're talking about the adala of human beings,
okay,
how does Islam define human being, and how does Islam describe the reality of a human being? As my brother mentioned, you know, Islam gives a sort of monotheistic and a tawhidi perspective for the human beings.
Okay.
So when you describe human being as a monotheistic, as a person who is in his or her path towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so when you want to distinguish his or her place, you know, it's completely different from a worldview that observe human being as a completely material object.
That's all right.
A thing that is here just to, you know, just to satisfy his or her desires.
It reminds me very much of the thoughts of Shahid Malcolm X. You know, before converting to Islam, he was looking for justice among the colored people, okay? But after conversion to Islam, according to the documents existing, it says the approach that Islam had and the trip that he took to the Mecca, to the Hajj pilgrimage, okay, on that time, said made me think that or rethink about the concept of justice or adala among the people.
Exactly.
I was looking for justice, but it was among the social boundaries of the U.S.
Because of the difference in definition, you know,
very
in
good.
That context,
that's right.
In the Islamic context.
Okay, that's right. In the liberal capitalist movements.
Sure, yeah.
And I think the problem is this. Nowadays, the people in the world are looking for the justice, but the type of justice they are looking for is very much limited to the humanistic approaches to justice, at least finding an answer for their materialistic, mundane, worldly needs, not the divine one. But if you are going to change the approach, you're going to change the lenses on your eyes, I think. Thank you very much, Sheikh Qasem and Sheikh Sadeq, for your presence in the program Viewpoints. It was very kind of you. We tried to discuss justice, adala, and seeking justice based on the viewpoints of the supreme leader of Iran, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. It was very kind of you, Sheikh Qasem.
Pleasure.
And Sheikh Sadeq. Thank you very much. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to us. For more information, visit our website, apostolate.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you. Fi amanallah. Assalamu alaikum, Ya Abu Abdullah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong, and the world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The limelight.
At least 2 million children in the United States have lost their Medicaid insurance this year. Many of the children were eligible for federal aid, according to experts, but errors have been common as states unwind assistance from earlier in the coronavirus pandemic. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. At least 2 million children have lost their health insurance coverage since the end of the pandemic policy that guaranteed Medicaid coverage during the health emergency, according to a new report. Through November 8th, a total of about 10.1 million Americans have been disenrolled from Medicaid, the health care program for low-income Americans, according to researchers at the Georgetown Center for Children and Families and KFF, a health policy group. Roughly 18.4 million people have had their Medicaid coverage renewed, the report found. The 2 million children who have lost their coverage represent 21 states that break out enrollment changes by age, and it's likely an undercount because data is still coming in, according to Joanne Alker, executive director and research professor at Georgetown. States in April began removing people from Medicaid's rolls after the expiration of a pandemic provision that had suspended procedures to remove people from the program, such as if they earned too much money to qualify. But experts have warned that many qualified people are at risk of getting booted, including millions of American children, because of issues like paperwork snags or if their families relocated during the last few years. About 3 in 4 of the children who have lost Medicaid coverage are eligible for the program, Joanne Alker told CBS Money Watch. Governors who are not paying good attention to this process are dumping a lot of people off Medicaid, Alker added. Alker described the enrollment issues as particularly acute in Florida and Texas. She added, there is no reason in the United States that children should be uninsured. The disenrollment of millions of American children and their families could prove to be a massive disruption in the social safety net, removing health care coverage for many of the nation's neediest families. While states and advocates prepared for the policy's unwinding, coverage losses are growing even among people still eligible, the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities said on Tuesday in an update. About 42 million children, more than half of all kids in the United States, are covered by Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, according to the American Pediatric Association. Ensuring children do not inappropriately lose their health care coverage is critical to supporting their health and well-being, the group said. The loss of health coverage for low-income children and their families come as more kids fell into poverty in 2022. The poverty rate for children doubled last year as government-funded pandemic aid dried up, including the end of the expanded child tax credit, and as parents' incomes shrank. ABC News, KERO television in Bakersfield, California, has also covered this story. Over 2 million children have lost their Medicaid coverage in the United States. Since April, many states have stopped Medicaid enrollment for low-income recipients as the federal policy guaranteeing health coverage during the peak of the COVID-19 pandemic has ended. Now, a new analysis by health policy researchers from Georgetown Center for Children and Families and KFF states that, as of this month, over 5 million Americans, including 2.2 million American children, have lost their health insurance. While it's not clear how many of these children may have found new coverage after the COVID-era ruling ended, researchers suggest these numbers might be significantly underestimated and could potentially be a larger number. 2 million children losing their Medicaid is a very high number, but it is an underestimate because of data lags between when states report unwinding disenrollments and when they report their current enrollment. Also, net figures reflect movement in and out of Medicaid, so more children are likely experiencing gaps in insurance coverage, researchers said. In 2021, the U.S. Census Bureau's American Community Survey counted 3.9 million uninsured children in America, which is why researchers believe the number could be a lot higher since children who were eligible for federal assistance ended up losing their eligibility due to incomplete paperwork or mistakes made by state officials. Earlier this year, the Biden administration found flaws in the Medicaid system, causing inappropriate coverage losses for children and some adults. Efforts to rectify the problem are ongoing, but the exact number of affected children is still unknown. Assuming that half of those children losing Medicaid have other sources of medical coverage, which seems somewhat optimistic, at least 1 million more children would be experiencing a period of uninsurance already. And the unwinding process has quite a ways to go yet, according to researchers. While the process of disenrollment is still ongoing across the United States, enrollment reductions also vary significantly among states, with California, Florida, and Texas leading in Medicaid disenrollments. Texas, in particular, is seeing the highest number of children losing their Medicaid coverage. The website MichiganAdvance.com has also covered this story. Despite federal warnings to slow down, both red and blue states have cut off Medicaid coverage for nearly 4 million people because they lack the proper paperwork. In at least four states, half of all the people who have lost their coverage for any reason are children. During the pandemic, the federal government directed states not to remove anyone from Medicaid, the Joint Federal-State Healthcare Program for Low-Income People and People with Disabilities. But states were cleared to resume eligibility and paperwork checks starting on 1st of April this year. Nearly three-quarters of the roughly 5.4 million Medicaid recipients who've lost coverage were terminated because of procedural reasons, according to an analysis from KFF, a healthcare policy research organization. Those removals happened due to an incomplete renewal process, whether because of missing paperwork, outdated contact information, or a renewal form not sent by a specified date. This month, the Center for Medical and Medicaid Services mailed letters to every state saying long waiting times and high procedural termination rates might violate federal regulations to keep those who are eligible enrolled. The letters came weeks after federal officials raised concerns about overzealous efforts to purge the rolls and gave states extra flexibility to re-enroll patients. Some states, such as Maine, have paused removals.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.